Well, we made it. The stores are closed. The rush is over. What you were going to get has been got. What you needed to buy has been bought. Everything you needed to bake has been balked. I would like to give you this is my Christmas gift to you. It's a Christmas breath. Let's take it together. Today they were on special 2-for-1, so let's do another one. I just don't know how it happens to me, but just that whole Christmas rush thing, I'm so much better than I used to be. But I remember a few years ago, and kids were still at home, and I was on my way to Westtown at 3:45 in the afternoon on Christmas Eve. And it had something to do with the equalization of the piles, and I wanted the day to be perfect, and I wanted everybody to be happy, and deep in my heart, I wanted everybody to like me. And all of a sudden, I screamed in my car, and I was like, really, dude, it's come down to this, that you're driving down Pellissippi, screaming. I remember the last year we got like a real tree, and it was my fourth year of Charlie Brown trees, and I just remember thinking, of all the dads in the world, you are the Charlie Browniest. And I saw this year there was an ad in the Vermont Country Store catalog, and they sell a Charlie Brown, it's actually a replica of that Charlie Brown tree on the Charlie Brown Christmas, and I'm buying one. And I am going to, that's going to be it. And I'm just going to embrace my inner Charlie and just let it be that thing. But I love this part where it's just, we made it. I was thinking this week about the first Christmas rush and a young couple wondering whether they were going to make it to the first Christmas, whether they were going to make it to Bethlehem, whether she was going to have her baby by the side of the road. You know, I don't know how you would tell after a week on a donkey, 9 months pregnant, how would you even know whether you're having contractions or that's just how everybody feels. You know, after a week on a donkey, your lower back hurts, your stomach's having cramps. When I think it would probably be impossible to imagine 9 months pregnant, well, I'm out at that point. I can't imagine that, but riding on a donkey from Nazareth to Bethlehem, which is the same, it would be the same as being 9 months pregnant, riding on a donkey from Knoxville to some, just a little bit before you get to Chattanooga. And you think, you know, when they were in Nazareth, getting up on that thing for the very first time, and it was probably took them about 7 or 8 minutes. They had it down by the time they got to Bethlehem, but Joseph's like, Lord, do I push from back here? I don't know. And she was just sitting up on that donkey looking down the road. Whether or not she said it, I bet she was thinking it. Really, Joe? Really? We're going to do this? And the reason that they were leaving town and on the road out of town is because of an ancient prophecy that was given by a prophet farmer who said that the promised one would be born in Bethlehem. The ancient scriptures, their scriptures, were filled with promises and prophecies of the coming one, the one who would be the hope and who is the hope of all the world. And for those who know him and love him, he is the one who is the light and the life of our heart, the one who really, you can't live in this world without him. You really can't leave this world without him. And the question is, like, how would they know, how would we know if there is one someone who is the only hope of the world, how will we know who he is? How will we know where he's from? And so the ancient scriptures are full of these promises and prophecies that tell us you don't have to look in China because He's not going to be Chinese, and you don't have to go to Argentina because he's not going to come from there, and you don't have to look in Canada or Samoa. But that the promised one would be born among the ancient Jewish people. And you think, well, they had like tribes and tribes of them. I mean, there was like a dozen tribes of them. How would we know? 19 centuries before the first Christmas, a promise was made that he would come from, of their dozen tribes, the tribe of Judah. And you're like, yeah, but I mean, they're still humongous. That's like thousands of families. And 1,000 years before the first Christmas, a promise was made that he would come from one family of that tribe, from the family of a guy named Jesse. Yeah, but he had like 7 sons. And a promise was given that the promised one would come from the descendants, not of Eliab, his oldest, or Abinadab, or his other sons, but the promised one would come from the descendants of his younger son, David. And so, the ancient scriptures, the Old Testament, it's full of, a lot of it is stories about how that flame was passed from one generation, kind of like we're going to pass the flames of candles in a few minutes, from one generation of David's descendants to the next, 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 until it reached a 13-year-old, and a flame was lit in a 13-year-old virgin who was also a descendant of David's family, and all through those generations and down through those centuries, it was like Satan was running down the line trying to blow the flame out. There came a time about 8 centuries before the first Christmas that a wicked woman who was actually a witch decided that she was going to take over the throne of Judah. And so she murdered every descendant, every male and boy descendant of David, everyone. Except for one baby that a courageous priest named Jehoiada hid in a storage room. And he raised him there in secret. And he told him at night stories about his ancestor, King David, and about his descendant, King Messiah, until they came the day that he brought him out of that room, and they put a crown on his head, and they blew the trumpets, and they overthrew the queen, and they ran through the streets singing, ding dong, the witch is dead, witch is dead, the wicked witch is gone where the goblins go below, 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 below. I don't know. One of the ancient prophecies was that the promised one would be born in Bethlehem. It said that he would, Isaiah said that he would come from Galilee. And Hosea said that he would spend part of his infancy in Africa. But Micah said he would be born in Bethlehem. I don't know if Joseph and Mary actually knew that they needed to go there because of that ancient promise. There's a place where Peter says in one of his letters, the first letter, he said that a lot of times for people way back then who were on the other side of those prophecies before they happened, it was difficult to put it together and see how it all fit. I think if they had known that they needed to be in Bethlehem, I think Joseph probably maybe at Mary's, 12th or 13th week at pregnancy might have said, we need to take our time, but we need to get on down there because we don't want to be making that trip when you're, humongous. And he was young and didn't know you're not supposed to say words like that to pregnant women. But God moved in the heart of the Emperor Caesar to think of himself as being so important that he needed to know how many imperial subjects he had and where they came from so that he could know how to squeeze all of the maximum tax revenue possible out of them, and decreed that everybody had to go to their ancestral home. And so Joseph and Mary, she was like, how can we do this? I don't want to have my baby in a cornfield between here and there. And he was like, it's better to have this baby in a cornfield than to have this baby in jail, because that's where you'd have him if we don't do what we have to do. And they made this trip, and it was dangerous. It was filled with dangers. They went through that road that's in the story of the Good Samaritan, the road that goes to Jericho where bandits were waiting to mug people. They would have been an easy target. It was a trip that was full of discomfort, sleeping on the ground with stones poking her from beneath and her little baby poking her from within. And it was a trip that was full of discouragement. And I know there were times when she just said at 1:30 in the afternoon, "That's it. I can't do any more today. I am so tired." I remember one day when Tina and I were going to a school that we were going to in Florence, and she was 9 months pregnant, and we would walk about a couple of miles, and we had to take two buses. It was in Italy, two buses filled with people who believed that deodorant was for people who are afraid of living their life. And it just came to a place where I realized I was walking by myself and she was standing beside me. And she said, "That's it. That's as far as I could go." And I said, "Babe, go home." And I don't know if Mary said it, but they couldn't stop. And somehow God gave them the strength and God gave her the courage. And they made it. Because an ancient prophecy said that they would make it. It wasn't awesome. The prophecy said they would make it to the town of Bethlehem. It didn't say they would make it to a bed in Bethlehem. There weren't angels flying above and around our Lord in the moments when he was born. There were flies flying around him and above him. There weren't kings kneeling before his throne. There were cows kneeling before his trough. Because he was laying in their food. The prophecy said they would make it to Bethlehem. It didn't say they would make it to Bethlehem Memorial Hospital. But they made it. In the stink and the flies and the straw and the tears and the sweat and the prayers and the praises. They made it. There were wise men who came from, they did a journey that was about 9 times longer than the one Joseph and Mary did, and it was filled with dangers and discomfort and discouragement, and they probably wondered whether they were going to make it, but they would make it because there was an ancient prophecy that said the promised one was going to have to go to Egypt in Africa, and their gifts would finance the trip. They followed a star, it says, and many astronomers believe, and people who love Jesus and who study that stuff say there's a great possibility that what they were actually following was a conjunction of the planet Jupiter. To all those people back in those days, Jupiter stood for the ruler of the world, and a conjunction with the planet Saturn, which stood for worldwide peace. And because this actually happened in about 70 BC, and it was found in a constellation of Aries, of the ram, which meant to them the people of Israel. And those guys saw like this conjunction of planets and stars. And it told them that the ruler of the world, the Prince of Peace, had been born in Judah. And, you know, a lot of people believe that's true. And if it is true, that that's what they were looking at. The way planets have their orbits that are all out of sync with each other. And the way stars cast their light, that astronomers say it was eons ago that the light years ago, that the light left those stars. That for that configuration of heavenly luminaries to come together in that perfect moment, in that perfect place, that had to be something that was planned on the days that the stars were born. And they would make it because the ancient prophecy of the maker of the stars said that they would make it. We don't really know when Jesus was born, whether he was born in December. He probably wasn't, because shepherds were keeping watch over their flock at night, and they don't do that in the winter there because it gets cold. It's going to be 41 degrees in Bethlehem tonight. But in John chapter 10, there is something that the grown-up Jesus says. And John says in that chapter that it was winter time. And he said it was the time of the festival of Hanukkah. For us, it was December. If you will, it was Christmas time. And Jesus said this, "My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me, and they will never perish." And what he's saying is, nobody really knows what 2011 holds for us. I bet it'll be full of discouragement and maybe have some discomfort in it. There may be some dangers in it. But our Lord promised one day at Christmas time that those who love him and those who know him will not be lost and they will not be wasted. And no matter what we have to go through, we're going to make it. Because 1,000 years before the first Christmas, an ancient prophecy was given. And it said this, "The Lord is my shepherd. I will not need anything." It may not be perfect, and I may not be able to make everybody happy. I may not be able to get everybody to like me, but apparently I might not need that stuff. Because the promise is he'll give me everything that I need. And that prophecy says for those who know and love Jesus that he'll restore our soul no matter what. And goodness and mercy will follow us every single day. And we'll dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Because prophecies were made that said that the promised one day would be born as a baby in Bethlehem. And it was prophesied that he would die as a lamb outside of Jerusalem, that he would rise from the dead, and he lives today to shepherd you and me from heaven and make sure that we make it. We're going to make it. And there's coming a day when we're all, everybody who knows and loves Jesus is together with him in heaven. And I don't know if this is really going to happen, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to take a deep breath and I'm going to say, we made it.